class. I have to leave the pistol for a brief few days. We're talking about Rishos Lanter, and last week we really went ahead of ourselves a little bit, and we were talking about the different shitas, the breakaways, so to speak, of his different shita of Musar, Rav Simcha Zissel, the Alter of Kelem, the Alter of Slobodka, the very unusual shita of Navardik, where the Alter of Navardik. Again, the truth of the matter is, the Alter of Slobodka and the Alter of Kelem and the Alter of Navardik were actually more Talmidim of Rav Simcha Zissel, but they had some shaychus to Rav Yisrael, and they became independent branches. And then Rav Itzel Petterberger, Yitzhak Blaser, and Rav Naftali Amsterdam, who you might call the private citizens of the Musar movement, but they were G'daylam Ad Miyait, even though they did not function within... they were connected to Slobodka, but kind of Balabatim connected to Slobodka. They didn't have an official position in it. Rav Shach, I mentioned, spent 2 years in Slobodka. And he says that he got to somewhat of a korva to the altar. And he tells some very interesting stories. He says the altar was a person who was so deep it was difficult to be aimed on him. And things that you saw, often you weren't able to understand. For example, sometimes the altar would bring up things. For example, the altar was very involved in who got aliyahs. And it was almost like a report card. Like, you know, obviously Shlishi was a chashev aliyah. If a person like was demoted from Shlishi to Revi, that was the Simon Barabin, that the person had to be a fashbish b'maisav. And there were kama v'kama maisim, where somebody got a revi one Shabbos and was sabrachim and said to the altar, what's going on? And the altar said, don't you remember 10 years ago we were walking and you said something about how somebody wasn't such a good guy and it was Lashon Hara, and I'm giving you Musar and Teichacha on this. He says, why did it take 10 years? Says, you weren't ready to be Makabel. Now that you're a starker ben Taira, you're more bigger in Midas, now I can give you Taira. So the altar like kept a memory of like everything people did, and he was Meichen Mamish to the moment. When would it be proper to bring something up? And that's why I had mentioned there were many people who were relatively weak in learning, at least comparatively speaking, or weak in Midas. The altar never gave any Musar at all. I said, wonderful, whatever you're doing is great. It was bedafka to the people who were most roy that the teichacha was often very, very stark. And Rav Shach points out, and this we know from other sources as well, that often it was contradictory. Rav Yeruchim, who had learned by the altar as well, would sometimes come to Slobodka and give a musar shmus. And the altar would come, although the altar was much older, and the altar would cry, and the altar would be so nisayre. And then he would scream at Rav Yeruchim, you're giving a shmuz that everybody should be a carbon copy of you. Where's the individuality? And people said, well, wait a minute, but the altar was listening to the shmuz, and the altar was deserved. Rav Yeruchim didn't raise the question. Rav Yeruchim understood what was going on. But the altar said, listen, your musar is gavaldic, but you also have to understand the other side of it. And an Adam Gadol can understand the contradictions that even in the greatest good, there might be chesreinus. In fact, the altar used to say, Davor v'hafuchay is mimidas habayre yisbarach. That the mida of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, he takes one thing and he takes the opposites. This is what Chazal say. Eisei shalayim bimreimav. What is the shamayim? The shamayim is eishumayim. Opposites. HaKadosh Baruch Hu combines them. The altar was filled with paradox, filled with stiras. In fact, there was another mice again. Rav Shach tells Kama V'Kama Maisim just from his 2 years there that the altar was mamish screaming at somebody. No one knew exactly why. And a bocher went over to the altar afterwards and he says, Rebbe, I'm not maharar achar rabbeisai. I'm not questioning you. But tairehi v'lilmod ani tzorech. He says, how is it shayach to be malbin p'nei chaver barabim? So he says, the altar started screaming. He says, he's chavere. You think malbin p'nei chaver barabim? You're calling him chaver of mine too. You know, and he said it loud enough so the person would hear. And no one really knew what was going on, but the person who needed to hear it knew what was going on. So this is not simplistic. This is very, very complicated. The altar had cheshbainais that went on for many, many, many years. It is brought down that he was constantly misaneh for Talmidim. Misana kama v'kama taniyas, that Talmidim should grow in Torah and Yerushalayim. I'm worried about them constantly. My Rosh Hashiva of Yaakov Itzik Ruderman was very, very close to the altar. The altar was like literally a father to him. And he recalls the Maisa that once he when he was at the altar's house for supper, the altar's own son, who was Rav Lazer Yudel Finkel, the Rosh Hashiva of Mir, but he wasn't Rosh Hashiva of Mir then, he was a Bachur then, came home for Pesach. And the altar said, Shalom Aleichem, and he went back to learning with Rav Yaakov Yitzchak. So the Rebbetzin came in and said, your son, what do you mean, your son just came home, you don't talk to your son? So the altar says, Rav Lazer Yudel is certainly my son, Yaakov Yitzchak is my son also. He says, I'm learning with one son now. Was mamish the same thing. The altar considered the Talmidim to be banim in very much of that same way. When Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was asked to describe his shaychus of what he felt to the altar of Slobodka, how much Torah did he learn from him, how much Musar, he says his relationship to the altar is the relationship a ger has to the basin that was Megayer him. What's the pshat? The basin that was Megayer me made me Jewish. Pashut, without that basin, I would be a goy. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said that was his feeling towards the altar. And he says, Chassidim say that Litvaks don't have a Rebbe in the Chassidish way. That Chassidim have a Rebbe, he says, that's not emes. The altar was our Rebbe in all of those ways. He happened to be a great, great Talmud Chacham as well. They say he was a Baki in Gantz Rush. In other words, all of the Rush in Shas, Pisker Rush, and Yuval Peh. But he Kamat never learned Barabim. In other words, he also obviously people knew he was a Talmud Chacham, but he was never a Makom. He didn't Badafka speak in learning that much, and he was never made a show of his learning. In fact, as I indicated last week, he did not have an official position. He was not the Mashgiach of Slobodka. There were other people that were Mashgiachim. He was around. He was like a shadowy figure who was hanging around. Of course, he started the yeshiva, but he didn't have an official connection. But everything was nechtach al piv. So the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka, so of course, Slobodka was around for around 80 years, but the two greatest Rosh Yeshivas, most famous, were Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer and Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein. They happened to be brothers-in-law. In fact, this is an interesting family. They married the daughters of the Almana Frank. It was a mishpacha in Kovna. Kovna, by the way, it's so fascinating. I was talking to somebody introduced me to a Russian woman who just underwent a conversion. Baruch Hashem, she underwent a conversion in London. So I asked her, where did she come from? She says, she comes from Slobodka. Now, I really have never met anybody who came from Slobodka. But, you know, I said, wow, Slobodka. I said, well, you know, this was in the Hasidic way. I says, among Hasidim, maybe Slobodka is not so important, but I mean, among Litvisha, Slobodka is like the greatest. After Volozhin closed, the greatest of the yeshivas, all the gedolim come from Slobodka. It was amazing. So she described the yeshiva, and she talked about the bridge that connected, like, I knew all of this, but no, the bridge that connects Kovna to Slobodka. Kovna was the big city, Slobodka was the suburb, and Bukharim used to cross the bridge, and you know, she talked about that a little bit. It was really very interesting. I have no doubt that there was a hashpa there that somehow she was able to receive. In fact, my raya is, well, it's not 100% raya, the Gemara says Rava. You know, Rava lived in Mechuzah. Rava lived in Mechuzah. So Rava said about the Goyim in Mechuzah, they're abirei lev, they're very hard-hearted, because every year there's a Yarchei Kala where thousands of Yidden come and learn Torah. And somehow the Goyim of Mechuzah are not Megayer. It has no influence on them. Rava was Nispoil. How is it Shayach that even a Goy sees the Gavaldiga covered a Torah and it's not Mashpiyan? So Rava said, there must be a Birei Leib. So I'm saying, Ka'ein this, of course it's much smaller, Ka'ein this, the learning in Slobodka. If it wasn't Mashpiyan the guy, he's an Abirei Leib. So this young lady was Zeicha to be Makabal that Hashpa, even many, many years after it closed. So the story about the Frank family, it's an interesting story. Rav Shraga Frank was a very, very Choshev Balabas in Kovna. He was a wealthy, wealthy man. He died as a young man, relatively young, and he only had daughters. He had no sons. And like his last words were to his almana, that be sure to find Talmidei Chachamim for our daughters. And the Almana indeed married off her four daughters to four Gedalia Yayla. Two of them are very famous, two are less famous, but also they're actually considered to be very, very great Gedalia. The four Frank sons-in-law, and by the way, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was a nephew. That's the brother of the Frank who was Nifter. As he Pittsburgh calls his 50th Yartzeit is this week, also a great, great gadol from Kovna, and Slavka. So one daughter married Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, who was Rav Aaron Cutler's father-in-law, but Rav Isser Zalman, you know Rav Aaron more, but Rav Isser Zalman was mamish considered to be gadol shebegdailim. The other was Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein. Both of them became Rashi Yeshiva of Slobodka, they were co-Rashi Yeshivas. Rav Isser Zalman then went to Eretz Yisrael, and leaving Rav Moshe Mordechai as the main Rashi of Slobodka. The other was Rav Baruch Horowitz, who was also a Rashi Yeshiva in Slobodka, or at least a Magid Shir. And the fourth was Rav Sheftel Kramer, who is the father-in-law of my Rashi Yeshiva, Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Ruderman. So Rebetzin Ruderman was a niece of Rav Isser Zalman and Rav Moshe Mordechai. Rav Baruch Horowitz and Sheftel Kramer were nifter relatively young. They say that they could have been the biggest of the four. But Rav Isser Zalman and Rav Moshe Mordechai were known as the most famous, certainly. And they both of them were Talmidim of Volozhin. Rav Isser Zalman in particular was very close to Rav Chaim. Rav Moshe Mordechai was a little closer to the Netziv, but they both became the great Rosh Hashivas. I'm not sure, I may have told you this Maisa. Rav Shach tells over a Maisa that when the Altar of Slobodka asked Rav Isser Zalman to be Rosh Hashiva, Rav Isser Zalman originally said, well, who else is going to be Rosh Hashiva with me? And the Altar said, why, you have to have the whole job yourself? He says, no, I'm happy to share it, but I need to know who's going to share it with me. So the Altar says, I'm thinking of another chashuva person, Rav Aaron Bax. So Rav Isser Zalman said, I can't take the job if Rav Aaron Bax will be co-Rosh Hashiva. He says, why, Rav Aaron is not Roy Vahogan? He says, no, Rav Aaron is Vaday Roy Vahogan. He's a gadol. He certainly could be Rosh Hashiva of any yeshiva in the world, but I cannot take the job if Rav Aaron Bax is Rosh Hashiva. What's the story? So he tells the story that Rav Aaron Bax was actually engaged to one of the Frank's daughters. But during Chol HaMoed, or before Yom Tov or something, before Yom Tov, he went over to the widow's store to see how she was doing, and he offered to help her a little bit in business. Because it was a hard time for her. So she broke off the shidduch. She said, oh, I'm not going to have a son-in-law who does business. You know, you start working, even though his kavanah was totally... So what happened was, that's how Rav Moshe Mordechai married the daughter, the Rav. Now, at that time, Rav Moshe Mordechai was in business. So Rav Isser Zalman said, what's going to be? I become Rosh Hashiva of Slobodka. My mother-in-law is going to visit. She's going to want to know who else is the Rosh Hashiva of Slobodka. It's going to be Rav Aaron Bax, the one who could have married, her daughter. It's going to be such an agmas nefesh for my mother-in-law. I cannot take the position. So the altar said, so who should I give the job to? He says, well, give it to Rav Moshe Mordechai, my other brother-in-law. So the story goes, Rav Isser Zalman got the job. Rav Moshe Mordechai, Rav Aaron Bax became Rosh Hashiva somewhere else, but not in Slobodka. So, now, I have a problem with the story a little bit, because it sounds like Rav Aaron Bax lost the job here, but Rav Shach was the spoil over there. Rav Shach used to tell over this Maisa, and he said, such a sensitivity you only find in the Rishonim, he says. This was a gewaldige thing. The truth is, Rav Isser Zalman was Yadua for his Midas. At his Levaya, an Alger Yid said to Rav Aaron, he says, you should know, it's an amazing thing, he says, you should know that even if your father-in-law would not have known a blot Gemara, he would have been the greatest Yid in Yerushalayim. I mean, Ad Kedek, the Tyrus HaNefesh, Amidas, which of course, one could say the Torah gave him that, but he said, but the Tyrus HaNefesh was so outstanding, the Tyvas Ayin, the Lev Tov, that it was a shame dover in and of itself, besides his tremendous ga'inus in learning. That was Rav Isser Zalman. Later, just to finish up the Rosh Hashiva, so the altar was not Rosh Hashiva, but the altar appointed the Rosh Hashivas. Later, Rav Isser Zalman went to Slutsk. From Slutsk, he then went to Eretz Yisrael. He made his son-in-law, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rosh Hashiva in Slutsk, and then Kletsk. Rav Isser Zalman became Rosh Yeshiva of Eitz Chaim, which is the oldest yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and he introduced the Litvisher Rav Chaim Lumbas, which had not really existed in Eretz Yisrael then. Rav Moshe Mordechai stayed in Slobodka, but interestingly enough, in the 1920s, Rav Moshe Mordechai moved Slobodka to Eretz Yisrael. It became the Chevron Yeshiva at Chevron. The altar actually came to Eretz Yisrael with Rav Moshe Mordechai. And the remaining Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka till the time of the Holocaust was Rav Isaac Sher, who was the altar's son-in-law. So what happened, therefore, was that Yeshivas Chevron was under the leadership of Rav Moshe Mordechai in Slobodka.
And the altar.
Huh?
And the altar.
And the altar. Yeah, the altar wasn't Rosh Yeshiva. The altar was the spiritual kayak. Rav Moshe Mordechai was here. And that became the Chevron Yeshiva in the 1928. In the late 20s, there was a very, very serious Arab massacre.
Were they both alive for that?
They both were alive then. There was a massacre in Chevron. And because of that massacre, the Chevron Yeshiva moved to Yerushalayim, where it is to this day. And after the Holocaust, the European Slobodka, under Rav Isaac Sher, he died, but it got relocated under Mordechai Shulman to Bnei Brak, and that became Yeshiva Slobodka. So Yeshiva Chevron was the Eretz Yisrael branch of Slobodka. Yeshiva Slobodka was the European Yeshiva that was destroyed in the Holocaust. Yeah.
Yeah. Were there many casualties from the Chevron Yeshiva?
Well, there were many. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, again, the Yeshiva wasn't tremendously large then. Again, there were not that many Avreichem or even Yeshiva Bachur Ben Eretz Yisrael at the time, but there were like 100, which was a very, very large. I mean, it was a very large percentage of the Yeshiva. Like,
what was the cause? They say there was a cause for why it happened. Why weren't they protected?
Well, as you know, to this very day, yeah. Although all Arabs all over the place are not so loving of peace, but the Arabs around Hebron are particularly militant, aggressive. The muftis and the various officials there were always calling, you know, when Yidden were going to the Maris HaMachpelah, that was a big thing. So they were just looking.
What did the yeshiva guys do wrong to get that penalty?
They were there. I asked me, Minas Shamayim, why Hashem was good? That I don't know. Listen, there was a Holocaust shortly afterwards. Yeah. Obviously, there was a Zman of Din. But if you're asking me why the Arabs did what they did, Fregnus Kinkashis, they did, do it, they would do it today. They do it today. You know, so, they did it then. There were, by the way, some very chashuva people who survived by playing dead. And there was a bunch of bodies and, some just keep your head down the ground and don't try not to breathe or hold your breath and, they managed to survive. Can you imagine how frightening that is, huh?
On to the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, why did it survive?
No, the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva was always in Yerushalayim.
Why is it finished? Like, the current building?
No, the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, they moved. There is still an Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. But the truth is, Eitz Chaim Yeshiva never became... Eitz Chaim Yeshiva is only for Yerushalmis. In other words, it's an old Yerushalmi maysat. And there'll be Yerushalmis, people who've been learning, for 50 years. They came there as Bachurim and Cheder, as children in Cheder, and they stayed there till they died. But it's a Yerushalmi. It didn't become, even though it had Rav Isser Zalman, but it didn't really take off as a great center of Lumbus. When he was there, it was. But afterwards, it's a great Makom Torah, but it's a Makom Torah. It's not so much for its Shiurim. It's a Makom Torah where Avreichem, who are Zakenim and Zadis and great Zadis,
sit there.
But as they say, but it wasn't the place like you didn't go to Eitz Chaim after Rav Isser Zalman to hear a Gevalde Geshir. It was a place where you sat and you learned. Gevarya Levin was there, etc. But again, you're 100% correct. All the Yerushalmi Gedolim are Talmidim of Eitz Chaim. Rav Shlomo Zalman was in particular Talmidim of Rav Isser Zalman. Rav Yoshev for a while. Rav Yoshev eventually, they say about Rav Yoshev, an interesting maisa. He was learning in a kailo for a while. And Rav Yoshev Viteva is very quiet. He's very quiet. I mean, he answers shailas because he gets asked shailas, but he doesn't like volunteer schmoozing in Kiddushim. So people thought, his chavrusa was always the reader, always the shrier, always the mechadesh. It was also a chash, became a very chash of a dayan. And they thought, Rabbi Yashir, the lesson they say is, they thought, maybe Mishnayos is the maximum. Maybe he chaps Mishnayos or something. They thought he really didn't know what was going on. That's what they thought when he was learning. He was a young Avrich. So Rav Herzog, who was the chief rabbi of Israel at the time, and he was very well regarded as a great Talmud Chacham, after the Holocaust, he had all sorts of shailas about agunas. To matru agunas, women who didn't know where their husbands were. So he went to the Avrechim in Eitz Chaim to schmooze with them, to see if, you know, he wanted to see if they had any. So he says, like, everyone has a chiddush, a svara, but, you know, when you're maturing an aguna, you can't just be mafalpil and svaras. You have to, you know, have the ideas, you're maturing eshes ish, you have to have the mukairas. So everyone was giving this and that, they were like lumbus stuff, but they didn't have a dover bara. So all of a sudden, this young fellow, Rav Yosef Shalom, you know, starts giving like all the makairas and the whole thing, and that's how he became Niskala. And Rav Herzog used to then, like, Rav Herzog forgot about everybody else, and he would just, you know, whenever there were shailas, he would talk to Rav Yosef about the shailas, about the psukim and the like. They say, too, the Rav of the Eda Charedis, after Rav Dushinsky, the first, was Nifter, was Rav Zelig Ruvain Bengis. And maybe you've heard of him. Rav Zelig Ruvain Bengis. So Rav Zelig Ruvain Bengis was in his 80s. Rav Yashiv was in his 20s. Rav Zelig Ruvain Bengis used to come to Rav Yashiv every Shabbos, and they would walk along Meyashorim Street, like from one end to the other, just talking and learning. It was really a very unusual shame dover that the head of the Eda Charedis, who was many, many years older, would go to Rav Yosef Shalom. Okay, but that's beside the issue. Rav Isher Zalman of Moshe Mordechai were brothers-in-law. Both of them were Talmidim of Volozhin. Both of them were spiritually Talmidim of the Altar of Slobodka. Both of them eventually came to Eretz Yisrael, although Rav Isher Zalman came much earlier and became the Rosh Yeshiva of Eitz Chaim.
Why did Rav Isher leave Slobodka to begin with?
Okay, the reason he left Slobodka to begin with is, this is an important point. One of the midas of the Altar of Slobodka, was he was extremely generous in trying to be miyaseid yeshivas elsewhere. So he would often send his best bachur to new places to start yeshivas. For example, why did his son Rav Elazar Yehuda become Rashiv of Mir? Okay, now he didn't start Mir, but he sent Talmidim to Mir, including his own son. Now, if you're a cynic, although it's L'shem Shemayim, part of it is he wanted to spread Musar to all of these yeshivas. In other words, by putting his Talmidim in these yeshivas, he was able to create a Musar Hashpa of Musar. I mean, you can call that cynical, but it's not cynical. I mean, he held that this was necessary for the door. This was the kayak that the door needed. So one of the places where he started new yeshiva was in a city called Slutsk. And the Rav of Slutsk was a very chashiva Rav, the Ridvaz. Rav Yaakov David Ben Zev, but Rav Yaakov David Velensky. And the Ridvaz, who by the way had a disagreement with Rav Chaim Zerich, he didn't like Rav Chaim Zerich, but that's beside the point. The Ridvaz very much wanted a yeshiva in his shtetl, and he asked the altar to send him Bachrim. And the altar not only sent him Bachrim, but he also sent him his Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Isher Zalman, who started a yeshiva in Slutsk that became a very chashiv yeshiva. Eventually, after the communist revolution, it moved to Poland, Kletsk, and that was the yeshiva that Rav Aaron Kutler became Rosh Yeshiva of until the Holocaust. The Rav Zalman went to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Henkin, if you've heard of Rav Henkin, Rav Henkin was a great Paisik in America, like with Rav Moshe. Rav Henkin was one of the Talmidim of Slutsk, kind of the legendary best Talmidim of Slobodka went to. So that's why Rav Isher Zalman left, because the Altar Taka spread to many, many yeshivas. He sent Bachur. Sometimes they would go for a Zman, etc. Sometimes they would stay. Rav Isher Zalman wound up staying and then went to Eretz Yisrael. As I mentioned, Rav Isher Zalman was a great Talmud Muvik of Rav Chaim, but he was not as meshubit to Rav Chaim's derech as Rav Baruch Ber. In fact, Yesh Darshan L'Shvach, Yesh Darshan L'Gnai. Some Rav Chaim said on Rav Isher Zalman, he says, he could have been such a gadol had he followed my derech totally. That's what Rav Chaim said. But Nebuch, he says, Rav Isher Zalman's love of emes is so stark that if he feels a certain nekuda is not emes, he can't be mevakel himself to it. That's what Rav Chaim said. Others say for character. Mr. Zalman's godless was, he was able to be a little more independent, but Baruch Be'er was mamish mevakel himself. Although Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky tells an amazing story, I think I mentioned Rav Baruch Be'er before he met Rav Chaim. He met Rav Chaim at 16 in Volozhin. Rav Baruch Be'er was a tremendous mechadish. But the chidushim were not al pi Rav Chaim's derech. So after he became a Talmud of Rav Chaim, he destroyed his chidushim. He says, they're not emes anymore. Anything I have, it's like the Gemara says actually, when Rabbi Zeira, was it? When he came from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, he fasted that he should forget all the Torah he learned in Babel. An amazing thing. He just wanted the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. Rav Baruch Be'er just wanted the Torah of Rav Chaim. But Rav Yaakov tells the following story. When Rav Baruch Be'er became Rosh Yeshiva of Kamenetz, and he had to give his first shiur, he gave a shiur based on the old derech that he had. And Rav Baruch Be'er said, he's very, very nervous being a magid shiur for the first time. So he says he's going to give himself the leeway to say things in a way that he's more comfortable and natural for him. That's an amazing thing, which means in spite of all the years with Rav Chaim where he tried to pull himself away from that particular derech, he still had a natural connection to that other way of thinking. Now, I can't identify precisely what the differences were, but it's a fascinating thing that kind of subconsciously he still was mekushet to that particular derech of Levi. Anyway, I mentioned that there's an interesting comparison between the altar and Rav Chaim. I had mentioned that Rav Chaim had such a brilliance in analyzing people's patterns of thought that he used to have this ability that if you told him one kasha and one teretz from an achrim, and you then told him any other kasha of that achrim, he will tell you how that achrim would answer. He just needed to hear a sample. Oh, that's how the Pnei Yeshua answers that kasha, so Pnei Yeshua will say this, Ketzais will say this. So Rav Chaim didn't learn a lot of achrim. But he was mechaben to every acharon if he just knew one shtickle. He only had to know one shtickle from every acharon, and then he knew whatever the acharon would say. He says, half the time he even knew the kasha. He says, well, this type of kasha would be asked, you know, by this acharon. This acharon would ask this type of kasha, and give it to him. The altar had the same kayach when it came to personality types. The altar had the uncanny understanding of people that he could see from the smallest behaviors of people who would become a Rav, who would be a Paisek, who would be a Dayan, who would be a Sheikhet, who would be a Rosh Yeshiva, who's going to go off the derech. And he was able from small things to be able to be Kaveya, what a person is. Of course, there's always Bechira. I mean, nothing is totally finished. But he was able to tell where a person's netiyas were going to lie. And kama upon him. I remember that my Rosh Hashiva was a young boy. So he was going to room with one of the chashuva people in Slobodka. The chashuva elder of Bachram in Slobodka. And the elder took him to his office or wherever. I don't know if he had an office, but he took him to a room. And Slobodka is located on a river, right? The bridge that connects. And he said, if you want to commit suicides, jump into the river now. Why do you have to delay the process? And it turned out that this chashuva person in Slobodka eventually became a conservative rabbi. Many years later. And nobody saw there was anything wrong with him. But the altar saw a sheirish at the very beginning. Right? So it was an interesting point that as Rav Chaim was able to analyze Durachim in learning, the Alter was able to analyze a person. In fact, when the Alter was asked, why doesn't he write Svarim of his Shmuzin? He says his Svarim are the Neshamas that he makes, the human. In other words, the Talmidim are his Svarim. He's not going to... Now we have Shmuzin, we have Svarim from the Alter, but they're not written by the Alter. Talmidim put down. The Vaisak Sher, for example, was the one who wrote down a lot of the Alter Shmuzin, and we have them. Yep. We have the Vaisak Sher Shmuzin also. Yeah. Well, remember, it was towards the end of the Alter's life, so the Alter was a bit of a chayla. He's not as active in it, but certainly it was his derech, Chevron. Of course, things have changed a lot, but Chevron to this day has a lot of the derech of Slobodka. In Slobodka, the shir was not such a chash of a thing. I mean, he had great gedolei Rosh Yeshivas, but no, he didn't spend time hours chazering a shir. Either you went or you didn't go. The ikar was your own learning, your own derech, your own individuality. That was kind of the mahalach of Slobodka. They do have one maisa that I remember from the altar of Slobodka in Eretz Yisrael, where he used to still give a shmuz Friday nights. And one time he was going pretty late, so his Rebbetzin stuck her head in the door and said, "The Bachram have to eat." So it says that he stopped in the middle of a syllable. He was he didn't even finish the word when she at that point. Okay. So Malach on the altar, because once again, in many, many ways, the yeshiva world of today comes much, much from the altar of Slobodka, in terms of the Rosh Yeshivas, the literature of Rosh Yeshivas and the like. And he was a very, very unusual kayach, an amazing kayach.
Can you say something about the focus on the shiur? What yeshivas were not supposed to shiur the yeshivas?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, the truth of the matter is, Voloshin was also not so focused on the shir. Although he had Rav Chaim Benetziv, you had the best Magide shir you could possibly have. You know, it's a funny thing. So, you know, Rebbeim shouldn't feel bad. You know, you give a shir so people don't come. You know, I mean, there were greater people, greater people than we are that didn't always have full houses going to their shir. So, Voloshin and Slobodka both had the idea, although Slobodka was a Musher yeshiva. But in terms of learning, they kind of left you on your own. They trusted you. People who went to Slobodka, certainly people who went to Voloshin, were already people who had, you know, they were not beginners. They were people who were Talmidei Chachamim and Lamdanim. The yeshivas that were more insistent on shir were yeshivas that may have taken younger people. So, for example, Baranovich, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's yeshiva, had a very rigid division of shirim. And you couldn't even go to Rabbi Chanan's shir like Rav Kanak, unless you pass through the lower levels. You were not allowed, like, to just go to a shir, or you weren't allowed to skip a shir. Right? So that was Baranovich. Another yeshiva was Tells. In fact, Tells may have started the emphasis on classes and shiurim. In other words, in Voloshin, for example, you only had the Rosh Yeshivas give shir. There weren't like lower, there weren't preparatory shiur. Tells started the musik of the graduated class to prepare you. So Tells, Baranovich, I think Kamenetz or Baruch Ber this year was a big deal. People came. Voloshin was actually a daily shir. I mentioned that in Voloshin, they went through Shas in 11 years. And that's why Rav Chaim, and in fact at some point, Rav Chaim and the Netziv, they weren't giving two shiur. They were alternating giving the same shir. That's pretty hard. In other words, you're giving the same shir, same guys. So even when Rav Chaim didn't have chidushim on a particular amud, the Netziv always had haaris because the Netziv had bekiyas. Rav Chaim didn't always have a chiddush, although I tell you, I would love to hear Rav Chaim just translate the Gemara. But Rav Chaim didn't always have a chiddush, so to speak, but he always had to read like half an amud. He says, "I have to do this. The Zaydi," and the Netziv was his wife's grandfather, "the Zaydi is going to start from the next amud tomorrow, so we have to cover it." So sometimes Rav Chaim gave shir for 10 minutes. He didn't, you know, just he had to read it with Rashi. Although I tell you, I'm sure there was a gevaldig value just in that. And then he went on. So Voloshin, the shir was not the highlight of the day. The concept that you would spend afternoon seder chazering a shir, I think they wouldn't even understand what that meant. In other words, a shir would be, oh, how did the Rebbe understand the Rambam? Oh, I understood it this way, the Rebbe understood it this way, okay, you know. In other words, it was simply data that you assimilated in your overall Havana of the Sugya. It wasn't like a thing in itself that was a big deal. Kletz, when Rav Aaron Yeshir did become, so again, it's hard to give you a pattern, but in some yeshivas, the Shir was not dominant. Chevron, to this very day, Shir is kind of a take it or leave it proposition. I mean, even going to a shir is not, you know, the most important thing an avreich or a bacher has to do. And that's really a Yerusha from Slobodka, where the shir was not the highlight. It was just input into a sugya. You get the input other ways. You talk in learning to people who were there. You talk to the Rosh Yeshivas directly, you know, later. No, it didn't have to be. You didn't have to hear their shir in and of itself.
Isn't that a plan? Let's shir to their
shir. Yes, yes. That's very, very true. That's why Slobodka, many different drachim developed. And in Voloshin, many different drachim developed. And even Rav Chaim's own Talmidim. Rav Chaim's Talmidim had many different drachim. Rav Isser Zalman, Rav Baruch Ber, Rav Ochanan Wasserman, Rav Shimon Shkup, all different drachim. Because, you know, heard the shir, but Rav Baruch Ber tried to be mishabed himself the most to Rav Chaim. But the other, you know, but even Rav Baruch Ber, one could analyze. I mean, one has to have a deeper understanding than I have on this. I mean, exactly what is Rav Chaim's pure derech, and what exactly, I mean, how are you going to touch up the difference between Rabbi Shimon and Rav Baruch Ber? I mean, I'll tell you a difference, but you need to be a master of everything Rav Baruch Ber said, and everything Rav Shimon said, and everything Rav Chaim said, and then you can figure it out. But I will tell you a difference in Rav Shimon and Rav Baruch Ber, and maybe Rav Shimon and Rav Chaim. Rav Shimon was a bit unique. Rav Chaim used to say that we are never interested in why, we're only interested in what. Meaning the Brisker Derech in its Yesod is we just want to know what it says. What is the getter? What does the halacha say here? Is the Yesod this? Is the Yesod that? Now you might start asking in the Brisker Chiyuv, well, what's the Svara for that? A Brisker will actually tell you. We don't have to have Svaris. Everything is a Gezeiras HaKasav. We just want to know what's the getter of the Gezeiras HaKasav. And Rav Chaim says we have to know Vushtet. What does it say? Not Farvushtet. Not why. And every Brisker Svara is really just trying to give you a definition of what is going on, but not giving you a reason. Rav Shimon Shkup is a bit unique. He tries to be yoyreid into the timing of these gedorim in terms of logic and svara. So Rabbi Shimon is a bit unique. Rabbi Shimon tries to look at the why and not only the what. Another issue with Rav Chaim's derech and Rav Baruch Ber is, which maybe Rav Shimon might address, I'm just giving you some differences, is that the kayach of brisk is only in maskanis. It's not so great in havimis. But by that I mean, brisk looks at the Rambam's psak, looks at the Ravid's psak, and will give you an analytical getter that is masbir, the Rambam, and the Ravid. Or Taisus and Rashi, whatever it would be. But it's very hard sometimes to take those svaris and read them through the shakla vitaria of the Gemara itself. Like, what was the havamina? What was that? In other words, the svaris don't work at different levels of the sugya. They work based on the finished product. Once you have the finished product, you then try to find the gedarim. But it's very hard to read it back into the mahalik of the sugya. And in fact, Rav Chaim very rarely does it explicitly. He doesn't go back and say, the Havamino. In fact, Rav Chaim very rarely explains Gemara, per se. In other words, he just tells you Rambam and Ravid. How that fits into the Gemara is another problem. As opposed to Rav Shimon tries to take you through the Shakla Vitaria of the Sugi itself. By the way, the Brisker Rav also tries to do that a little bit more. It's interesting that one of the deviations of the Brisker Rav and Rav Chaim is that the Brisker Rav tries to apply the Brisker Lumbus to the Shakla Vitaria itself and not just to the maskanis of the Rishayim. Okay, but that's these are abstract points, but these are things to think about in terms of a derech of alimut. The emesis, obviously, a person tries to do both, right? The Chazanish, for example. The Chazanish, who didn't like Rav Chaim's Mahalik overall, the Chazanish Badafka tries to trace everything through the Shakla Vitaria of the Gemara. The in and the out, the havamina, the maskana, etc. That's one of the things the Chazon Ish does. It's a meticulous line by line by line by line by line thing. Okay. Let me go. Oh yeah. Okay. Let me go back to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, though, because I was going ahead. We were talking about Slobodka. And as I say, when the young lady was telling me about the bridge, I was all excited because I sometimes feel like I see that bridge between Kovna and Slobodka and the like. But all of this started from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he died before 80. He did not live to be extremely old. But his life had many, many distinct stages. As a young man, he was a great Eloi. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Vilna, which had a Choshev Yeshiva. His Derech, this is pre-Rav Chaim, right? This is already 1840, not so long after Volozhin was founded. His Derech was the old Derech of Pilpul and Charifas, where you just bring a lot of things together. You could give him Aram HaKaimus, and he could, like a Cholent, he could combine anything, etc. Eventually, now he went through an interesting metamorphosis even in Derech Halimud. Eventually, he was chayzer from Pilpul to focus on Pshat. It's Pashit Pshat. Like, what's the Pashit Pshat? In other words, because Pilpul, see, the problem with Pilpul is Pilpul, I don't mean Pilpul, you know, we use Pilpul today just to mean Ian, but Pilpul, in its classical sense, was not Ian in general. It was a specific type of Ian, kind of an Ian that was based on a lot of charifas, a lot of sharp bringing together all sorts of things, which maybe if you thought about them in deep svara, they weren't so connected. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter initially was Nimshach Acha Charifas, but then he thought it wasn't Emes. So he's Meshabed himself to Pshat. But then he had a change of mind and he went back to Charifas. Because he said, an emphasis on Pshat, listen to this, has a certain aspect of Gaiva, that you're using your Seichel, your logic, to determine if two things are alike. He says, no. Maybe the Seichel HaTorah is Lamaila from our Seichel. So if there seems to be connections, just because they're not so iron tight to it, kind of money, he felt that an over reliance on ironclad Pshat had a certain Shemitz of Gaiva. So the Musar affected his Hadracha. Yeah, I understand, but he wanted to be Eiker that Midah. Be it as it may, initially, he was a Rosh Hashiva. I mean, he wasn't, he didn't start a Musar movement. He was a Rosh Hashiva. But it does say that from the time he was young, he was Nishbay by Rav Zundel of Salant, who told him, you want to be a Yerei Shemayim, learn Musar. They also tell the story, although there's so many stories where he's also Salanter, that he was once walking in Vilna, and there was a shoemaker, and the sun was going down. It was already dark, and the shoemaker was stitching leather by the light of a flickering candle. And Rav Yisrael said to him, it must be very hard to stitch shoes by the light of a candle. And the shoemaker said in Yiddish to him, I wish I could say it in Yiddish, he says, as long as the candle's burning, there's work to do. And Rav Yisrael had this midah all of his life, as Chazal do, that even somebody says something b'lashon hedget, he sees this as a message from Hashem, because what is the candle? Ner Hashem, nishmas adam. My nisham is a candle. As long as the candle is burning, there's work to do. And that, Rav Yisrael said, was a great hashpah. So his life is divided into segments. Rosh Hashiva in Vilna. He then left Vilna and went to Kovna. Kovna is the city of which Slobodka is a suburb. In Kovna, he gathered the great Talmidim who became the nucleus of Musar, Rav Simcha Zissel, Rav Yitzhak Blazer, Rav Tali Amsterdam, other people. Later, the altar of Slobodka was Mechubar towards the end of the Kovna period, and the altar of Navardak, many others as well. He gave them Shmuzin. He started Batei Musar for Balabatim. Batei, a base Musar, is where people would go to be Mispainain. We talked last week about Musar Bihispailus, which is emotional Musar, where you repeat a Maimar Chazal 1,000 times. And then Musar Bi'ian, he created the idea of a Vad, which is not just to learn a Sefer, people make a big mistake. It's not, let's have a chavrusa in Mesil Sharm, that wasn't it. Eivad is, people would discuss their struggles, their cheshbon ha-nefesh, the midos they need to improve. You would tell me how I could, what midos I need to work on, I would tell you. Tough love, difficult, you have to be very stark. And they would work on these things. And Rav Yisrael was miyased this. But then, there was a lot of opposition, by the way. There was a lot of opposition to the idea of Musar, strangely enough. Rav Chaim was not in favor of it. He felt Torah alone would be enough. Chavitz Chaim was in favor of it, because Rav Chaim was a little later than this. This is early. As I mentioned, the author of a 5-volume work on Tznuas HaMusar, which goes through all the Gedalim of Musar and all the Meisim, wrote another volume that was printed separately called Pulmas HaMusar. Pulmas HaMusar means the fight against Musar. And this he printed separately because it has a lot of what you might call Lashon Hara, newspaper articles from the time, Charamim of different Rabbanim. A shame that there was opposition to Hasidus. They thought this was a new derech. Rav Yisrael Salanter was even told by one of the Rabbanim in Kovna. He says, if you want to come to Kovna to start a yeshiva, Baruch Hashem, you're a gadol. If you're just going to come to waste your time on giving Musar Shmuzim, get out of here. We don't want you. I mean, this was the lesson that they said. He says, you're a public menace. So there was a lot of Fisnagdus. And again, the Isnagdus was not to opening up a Mesila Shashara and learning it for 15 minutes. I mean, who's going to fight over that? But the Isnagdus was to have separate houses, to have these long vadim that might take up hours and hours of time. Also, there was a fear that this Cheshbon HaNefesh might take a person away. You know, like a person says, I can't learn because that would be Gaivet. Like, in other words, I'm not going to learn Be'ian because I get too conceited when I learn. No, there were tendencies that could feed into that. But I just want to say one thing, to go back a little bit. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter claimed that his derech of Musar was actually a Yerusha from the Gra. And Rabbi Yisrael said, the real miyasid of the concept of working on your midas is actually the Gra. First of all, remember Rabbi Yisrael's Rebbe was Rav Zundel of Salant. Rav Zundel of Salant was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Right, so you have a connection there. But in particular, Rabbi Yisrael pointed out that the one sefer we have from the Gra that deals with Musar Mamish is his Perish on Mishlei. And that's the one sefer the Gra commanded be printed. Right, it was printed right after he died. It was the first sefer printed after the Gra died. And in the Perish on Mishlei, the Gra says something that is very, very amazing. Very, very amazing. He goes on the idea that Torah is compared to water. Right? All of us know this. Torah is Nimsheles L'mayim. Just like, many reasons, just like Mayim is necessary for life, Torah is necessary for life. Just like Mayim goes Mimakaim Gavaya, L'makaim Namuch, Torah leaves the Baal Gaiva and goes to the Anav. Right? We all know this. Listen to what the Gra says. The Gra says, the reason Torah is compared to water is because water causes growth based on whatever is in the ground. If I pour water on ground that has wheat seeds, I get wheat. If I pour water on ground that has poison, I get poison. The Gra says, now, you can't, the one thing you can't accuse the Gra is not being machshiv limud ha-Torah. Right? That's the one accusation that can't stick under any possible definition in the world. The Gra says, a person learns Torah without tikkun amidas, it can actually make him worse. If a person, at least for gaiva, if a person, let's say, is a baal gaiva, or combative, or aggressive, learning will give him another avenue to be combative and aggressive. And therefore, the Gra says, it is a davar nachutz that we purify our midas in order to be a kli to be matzliach in Torah. This is mavil that the Gra would say this. I could hear if the Baal Shem Tov or someone in Hasidisha might say, the Gra says this, in Mishlei. So Rav Yisrael Salanter says, you see from the Gra, the Gain Guf, that without Tyrus Amidais, the Torah could be mazik you. Again, as the mashal was given later by Rabbi Yisrael, that a sick person who eats a normal person's diet will get sick. Torah is the diet of a healthy soul. But when a person is a sick soul, they need other things too. Now, Musar is also Torah. I mean, it's not that Musar is not Torah, but Musar draw, you know, Musar is not necessarily learning the Amkus of Isugya in Halacha, but it's working directly on Tikkun Amidas. That's one aspect of it. Now, Rav Yisrael Salanter also made the point, which is very important, and maybe this is the part that remains more than some of the other things, is that instead of looking at Musar as something apart from Halacha, we have to be makir the halachic implications of Midos Tovas. So, for example, the halachos of the Ahavta Korach is a mitzvah. So, Avas Yisrael, Hachnasas Orchim, Onas Devarim, Malbin Pnei Chavera. These are not just nice Midos to strive for. These are halachos. If one is dishonest in business, it's not just the question, I have the bad Midah of dishonesty. I'm over, right? So Yisrael Salanter made the point that it's not just what we call midais that is involved, that a lot of things are halachais psukas. Now, this was an akuda that the Chazon Ish was very much maskim to. The Chazon Ish, and we'll talk about this, had a certain hisnagdus to the musr part of musr, where you're just working on analyzing your motives. Because the person would always say, when I learned today, did I learn L'Shem Shemayim? He said, that's going to drive you crazy. But the notion of being sure that you're following the halacha, that the Chazon Ish said. Now the Chazon Ish said, you don't need Musar per se. He says, you just need Shulchan Aruch. He says, follow the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Yisrael talked about that too, but he also worked on direct personality development. Let me mention another makar. So I mentioned one makar is the Gra in Mishlei of Tyranim Shalas Kamayim that Rav Yisrael worked on. There's another makar that he derives from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. And this is the Nefesh HaChaim. And this is fascinating. The Nefesh HaChaim says, the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, that Yiras on the Pasuk, Yiras Hashem Hi Aitzareh, that Yiras Hashem is like the Otsar, it is like the preservative, the treasure house of Torah. Right? So Yiras Shemayim preserves your Torah. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, if I look at Yiras Shemayim as a preservative, then let's look at the halakha of preservatives. The Mishnah says in Rav Metzia, if I sell you a certain amount of grain, like you agree to buy a ton of grain, what percentage can be the dirt that preserves the grain? It doesn't have to be pure. So state, up to 1/24 can be preservative. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner says that although when a person's learning, you should just focus on learning, you don't focus on devekus or kavanos or the like, but you're allowed to focus on what you need to preserve your Torah. And Yiras Shemayim is called a preservative. And preservatives can be one, Torah is called tavua. So kishem that when I sell you grain, I can sell you 1/24 of preservative to your grain, then 1/24 of my learning time could be devoted to hisbaininess in Yiras Shemayim. Now figure that out. If a good learning day, we're going to try to do more, but a good learning day is 12 hours a day. So 1/24 is a half an hour. So if you ask, what is the makor of Musar Seder being a half hour? It's based on the Nefesh HaChaim. So there's a cheshbon. Now, Rabbi Yisrael did not follow that. I misspoke when I said Rabbi Yisrael, because Rabbi Yisrael's Hanaga was much, much more than that. But as it eventually got pared down, there was Seinich on the Nefesh HaChaim. Rabbi Yisrael would say, Rav Chaim's board is for the healthy neshama, the preservative. Once you're spoiling, you need something more drastic and the like. So Rav Yisrael left Vilna. He started his Musar Tenua in Kovna Slobodka. In fact, even before the Alter started the Slobodka Yeshiva in the 1880s, Rav Yisrael started an earlier institution, the Kovna Slobodka Kailel, which actually was the first Kailel in Europe. You think Kailel giving a stipend to married people, you think it goes back, you know, from the time of the Amoraim. I see this sometimes. Sometimes yeshivas are a little overdrawn, like they say, this is the way they learned in Rabina and Ravashi's time. You know, the Emes is the first Kailel in Europe was the Kavna Kailel that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter started. And that was the precursor for the Yeshiva of Slobodka a little later on. But what Rabbi Yisrael eventually did was, the second third of his life, or the last third of his life, more than 20 years, a drastic move. He left Lithuania, he left Russia, and he moved to France and Germany, places that had kimat, no religious Jews at all, and even if they had religious Jews, they were not B'nai Torah, there were no yeshivas, and he wanted to be Makariv and Mashpia there. He would go back and forth. He left his family in Kovna, his wife and children, and of course his children were grown by and large, and he would often go back and he would spend a month there, you know, a month at a time there. But Biikar, he spent around 25 years in France and Germany trying to work with college students. And remember, he was not young, he was not so young anymore, with assimilated Jews, intermarried Jews, Mechalalei Shabbos. He was really the first, in that sense, active, well, since Avraham Avinu, at least, the first active Kiruv worker. He was trying to engage in projects to translate the Talmud into German. He didn't know German. He taught himself German, but he wasn't fluent enough to translate. He met with Rav Shimshon Afal Hirsch, and he wanted to translate the 19 letters into Hebrew for the Yidden in Russia, etc. We'll talk about that. So he was very involved in trying to be Mashpia in a world that was totally different than the yeshivish world of Lita and Russia. He once explained that, you know, when you have a team of wild horses running down a mountain, you can't stop them until they hit the bottom. So he felt at some point, he was a little miyayish about Russia and Lita, he says, the Haskala is still running down the mountain there. I can't do that much, he felt. In Germany, they hit bottom with assimilation, reform. Now I can start bringing them up. So we'll talk about that next time, Rabbi Yisrael's career in France and Germany. Very, very amazing, because here was a person, I mean, he didn't know the language. He did not have a secular education. Remember, he was not a natural person who would be able to go out there and talk about all those things. But he saw a need. He went. He taught himself German. He started arranging people to give lectures and shiurim, people who were professors and the like. He went to Rav Shimshon Afal Hirsch to work with him, and he went to Rav Yisrael Hildesheimer to work with him. And the Imamish was mevatel himself. Now, it's interesting, Rav Yisrael was sometimes very, very lost in thought. I'll just end here. And he was vertracht. In other words, sometimes he would be misveining, and he literally would not know where he was. So in Prussia, which was that part of Germany where he was for a long time, the Germans were very meticulous. So they didn't like loiterers, and they would arrest you if you're just wandering the street for no reason. So he had on his passport a stamp that said in German something, Vertracht. Here is a man who tends to get lost in thought. Do not bother him. So he actually had a special passport that allowed him to wander around. Okay, let's stop there. All right, so 2 weeks from now.